Do you guys know what to do with a shark attack in a shark attack? Punch him in the nose? Punch nose? Eyes? Eyes and gills. So you'd just be like rotating. You're like, boing, boing, gotcha. So you'd be like, punch him in the nose and eyes and gills, eyes and gills. Oh, take that right in your eye, now in your gill. How does that feel? And then you just swim off after you took that shark down. Look at you taking charge in that big ocean. It's impressive. Eyes and gills. Well, that's what I thought, like, punching in the nose was what you're supposed to do.
Oh, yeah, some great split ends in a song we have to play every summer as people get ready to go out to the beach, enjoy their summer holiday, and be a little fearful of the fish that rule the oceans. Hey, this is Flea filling in for Duncan Strauss today. He's on vacation. He's probably out there swimming with sharks somewhere, rubbing their bellies and having a great time. And I'm here with Jen Williams, who is the Tampa coordinator for Southeastern Guide Dog Puppy Raisers. Hi, Jen. How are you?
Good morning, Flea. I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. So glad you could come by today. Just let people know that I guess I'm kind of a puppy raiser in training myself.
Absolutely.
Learning the ropes. And Jen is a person in charge of that, and she's here with a puppy. Actually, we're here with a puppy, and Burrell is down here. So if you hear any barking or anything like that, it may not actually be me. It may be Burrell down there. So for people finding out about Southeastern Guide Dogs, what is Southeastern Guide Dogs?
We are one of the dozen accredited guide dog training schools in the country. Guide dogs lead the blind. To guide is to lead, as opposed to a service dog for someone in a wheelchair or for someone who's hearing impaired. We've been around since 1982, and we train, harness train, dogs to lead the blind.
Great. And right now, you're basically involved with the puppy raising. What exactly is puppy raising?
There are quite a few stages in the puppy's life. There's the time it spends on campus when it's a tiny baby. Mm-hmm. And there's the time it spends in a personal family home. That's the puppy raiser. Then there's the time it spends with professional trainers. So a puppy raising family is one that takes the dog into its home for about a year, maybe as much as a year and a half, gives the dog a tremendous amount of basic training, socializing, lots of fun and games as well, and probably most importantly, takes the dog out and about in the community, just everywhere possible, to get the dog used to what it's like out there, all the different stimuli in the world.
And what do you call that? There's a name for exposures.
Expose them to everything, if you will.
So now, does a puppy come straight from the mother to the puppy raiser? Like, are you like, you know, 101 Dalmatians and you've got like, you know, 14 puppies you're leading around town?
Not quite that quickly. They stay with their own moms in our puppy kennel down on the Palmetto campus for the first 6 weeks of their lives. Then their moms go home to the family that hosts the mom. And for 3 more weeks, they're in our puppy kennel just with their siblings. And at that point, they're out for what we call puppy hugging. So 5 days a week, not Thursday and Sunday, anybody in the community can go down and hug puppies.
You can hug puppies?
You can. Now it's by reservations, so you would want to go to our website, guidedogsplural.org. But it is a fixer of bad attitudes.
Yeah, I heard it's like the best drug ever.
It's pretty cool.
But it's very addictive, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we warn people that it is addictive.
Absolutely.
So what kind of, people might want to know, what kind of dogs? Like, we have like dachshunds for short people and poodles for curly-haired people? No.
Yeah, great question. Mm-hmm. They need to be large breeds. There are a lot of breeds that can do it, but they need to be large breed dogs because sometimes they have to sort of body block you to keep you from stepping somewhere that wouldn't be safe.
Mm-hmm.
So if it were a little dog, you'd fall over them or they simply wouldn't have the power to block you. Currently, we use Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers, and a hybrid of the two that we call a Goldador.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like I remember from movies and stuff like that, that Golden Shepherds seem to always be the guide dogs.
You do. The German Shepherd was the quintessential guide dog for many, many years. The first dog in America to guide a blind man was a German Shepherd. And there are some schools that still use them, and there are some schools that use them exclusively. It's really the personal preference of the guide dog school. And about a dozen years ago, we just had people at Southeastern who didn't particularly want to stay in German Shepherds, so we did go out of them.
Hmm. Okay. So we talked a little bit about it, but how long does it take to raise a puppy, a puppy raiser? This is a person who takes the dog into their home for about a year.
Right. At 9 weeks, we get them, and they're with us between a year and a year and a half. Usually, they leave us when they're about 14 months old, and then they go back to the campus, and that's when they're with professional trainers to learn the things that are too hard for us to teach. We aren't professional trainers. We are volunteers and we are amateurs.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's definitely a lot of stuff that you do teach
the
puppy. What are like some of the things that a puppy raiser
We teach them a lot of things you would teach your pet dog and a lot of things that you wouldn't. So sit and stay and calm and down, those sorts of things. We absolutely do teach them basic obedience. But then we teach them a lot of moving commands. They need to know their directions, right and left. We teach them commands for going in and out of doors, in and out of elevators, up and down stairs. No reason a personal pet would need to know those things. And then we teach them good behavior in public. We teach them to be calm, gentle dogs, to greet people calmly and gently so that when they are in their career, they can be unobtrusive and professional in public.
And also things like to ignore various stimuli?
We want them to ignore just about anything when they're working. The puppies have a cloth coat that advertises to the world that they're working. Working guide dogs have a leather harness. But a dog that's working, whether it's in the puppy phase or in the adult phase, really needs to stay focused on what it's doing to keep its handler safe.
What are some of the biggest distractions or hardest things to teach a puppy
to ignore? Dogs. Dogs are difficult. Some of our puppies are also distracted by birds and lizards. Certainly lizards are common around here. Some of them are very distracted by people in general or maybe just kids. But the toughest thing, whether you're in public or just on a fun walk in your neighborhood, is the distraction of other dogs. They're social creatures.
Mm-hmm. So a puppy raiser, I think you've kind of explained this, but a puppy raiser does not really train the puppy to work with a blind person.
Correct. We give them a lot of basic skills, basic obedience, some of those directional skills that I was talking about. But the professional trainers who are highly, highly skilled and have put in a lot of time and education toward their positions teach them the life and death kinds of maneuvers, what a dog might walk you into, it has to learn to avoid. We call those clearances, something overhead or a narrow passageway. The dog needs to learn how to get both of you through that. And then certainly traffic crossings, the most delicate thing they have to learn, and we are not equipped to teach that.
So it seems to be there's a fine line between a dog doing what you ask it to do and to think on its own to protect you from something that obviously as a blind person you don't see.
Absolutely. A lot of us call guide dogs the Cadillac of working dogs because they make life and death decisions every day. They really have to be the cream of the crop. So we have to teach them what is called intelligent disobedience. Typically, you want your dog to do what you ask it to do when you ask it to do it. And I've seen your dog, and your dog does what it is asked to do. But with our dogs, if a blind person were to be standing at a corner and sense from listening to the traffic that the light had turned green and it was time to go, that person is going to command the dog to go, but that's when the dog's senses have to kick in. And it's going to look around to make sure somebody's not making an unwarranted right on red right in front of you. So it has to be courageous enough and confident enough in its own thinking, its own determinations to say, you don't mean this, Mom. We're not going right now. That's refusal of a command. And a lot of them don't want to take on that responsibility. It's a high-stress job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So how long have you been involved with the Southeastern Guide Dogs?
I've been raising dogs for almost a dozen years. Currently have my 10th dog.
Wow. And how'd you get involved?
Originally by reading a book when I was about 9 years old called Follow My Leader, and many, many puppy raisers in this country would cite Follow My Leader, about a little boy who lost his sight to fireworks. And everyone said, you need to get a dog. He said, I don't need a dog. I need my eyes back. Well, eventually he got a guide dog and it gave him his life back. And I was just sparked by that book into thinking, someday I've got to work with those dogs. It was then 35 years before I was at a place in my life to do it. It's not something you can do on a whim.
And what's the name of that book again?
Follow My Leader.
Mm-hmm. There's people out there. Required reading for WMNF listeners. Give that one a good read. So you read the book. You waited 35 years. You got involved. Can anyone raise a puppy?
We don't need particular skills in our puppy raisers because we'll give you that skill set. What you need to have is a lifestyle that will accommodate it. I liken it to the difference in going from when you didn't have children to when you had children. Before, when you didn't have children, your lives were your own. You made whatever decisions you wanted. You ate when you wanted. You traveled where you wanted. As soon as you had that baby, everything was about the baby. And that's what it's like when you're a puppy raiser. Everything is about the puppy. When did it eat last? When was it relieved last? When did it nap last? If you want it to be good at a fancy restaurant, it had better be tired. So you have to invest that energy into getting it well exercised before you go. So it's all about your lifestyle. If you're a very busy businessman going from meeting to meeting to meeting, that would be a tough lifestyle for a dog. It needs a little more flexibility on your part when it's little, especially.
Yeah, a lot of attention. You keep your eye on those dogs.
24 hours a day, they're never out of our sight.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about the blue. They wear a blue coat, at least Southeastern Guide Dogs.
They wear
a blue coat. And what does that mean to the general public or whatever? I mean, it means, hey, friendly dog, go and pet it, or...
Yeah, number of facets of the coat. First of all, it tells people that it's a working dog. People are used to seeing dogs in various coats, and they stop and they read the coats. So by knowing it's a working dog, in my experience, 95% of Americans don't approach a working dog. They just have been told somewhere along the line, don't mess with that dog. So that's the first thing it does. The second thing it does is it lets proprietors of businesses realize that it's a working dog and that they should let it into their place of business. So these guys have access to most businesses during the time that they're being raised. The only way they can learn to be good in buildings and stores is by going into buildings and stores from the time that they're little. And thirdly, the coat serves a purpose for the dog. We have to develop a real split personality in these puppies. They need to know when they're on duty and they need to know when they're off duty. And the minute you take this puppy coat off, they know it's puppy time. People often ask us, does the dog ever get a chance just to be a puppy? Absolutely. The minute I get home, the coat comes off, the dog gets to be a puppy until the next time that we go out. Albeit a puppy with a lot of rules, but still a puppy with play dates and swimming in the pool and lots of toys and all those sorts of things. So the coat is what teaches the dog, when the coat is on, mom's expectations are higher. When the coat is off, I can be sillier. And then it's just a natural progression for them to go from the coat to the harness when they go back down to campus.
About how long does it take them for them to the puppy to recognize that the life is different with the coat on?
That's impossible to put your finger on. Somewhere along the way in the middle, you say, you know, I think she's getting it. But different for every puppy, and I wouldn't want to put a month on it.
So as you mentioned, you can take a puppy to work?
If your employer's okay with that.
So mm-hmm. your employer's not forced to let you bring the puppy to work?
Forced to. Mm-hmm. Some employers will fear that you can't give the necessary attention to your work if you have to give this much attention to the dog. It's a personal situation. If you are really committed to this lifestyle, you can find a way to do both. I taught high school for 27 years, and for the last 10 of those years, a dog has been by my side every day, and I could work that out. Now, I was a part-time teacher. Had I taught from 8 to 3, I don't know. That would have been difficult for a puppy to be that good at a desk with only 5-minute breaks and a short lunch hour. So it really, again, is your lifestyle, whether or not your lifestyle would accommodate having this dog at your feet and meeting the dog's needs.
So what was it like teaching with the dog there? How did the kids react? I mean, how did it affect your teaching style?
The kids were great. I would always introduce the puppies at assembly when they were very tiny, and I would remind the kids, you know, she's working when she's got that coat on, and if you would please, even if you see us going down the hall and she's not in her coat, stop and ask me if it's a good time, because we may have 5 minutes to get outside and back, and so it won't be a good time. And to a man, they would stop me and say, would now be a good time? And they would also understand if I said, no, it really isn't. We're running outside, but ask me again. And they were very good about not sneaking a pet easily, walking up and down a staircase. You could stick your hand out, steal a little pet of the dog. They knew better. They didn't. When we had visitors, the kids that were used to the dogs would say to the visitors, oh, don't pet that dog. It's a working dog. So it was wonderful. And it was excellent for the dog to be able to be raised in such a crazy situation or potentially crazy situation. You could ease them into different levels of craziness. I didn't take a very small puppy in front of the all-school assembly with lots of clapping and cheering because that would be too much. But by the time they got a little bit older, they could go there. And I would remind the students, these were high school age students, I would remind them frequently that they had a much bigger role in the dog's training than they realized because they ignored them. And that's something you can't simulate. I need people to ignore my dog so she learns not to seek attention. And that's what they did every day. It worked out very well.
And at what point did you realize that the students were smarter or not as smart as the dog?
Oh, I taught pretty smart students. I teach pretty smart dogs.
Okay.
So I'm not sure I ever came to that realization.
All right. So, you know, people might be wondering, you know, well, I like to go to the gym and that takes a couple hours. What do I do? Can I take the dog to the gym?
Depends on the dog. Depends on your workout strategy. A very young dog is probably not going to be able to stay quiet and calm attached to a machine, especially if you're moving from machine to machine. Mm-hmm. Just when the dog gets calm, you want to pick it up and move it to another machine and settle it again. It's not prepared to settle like that. So for the early months, probably no. But we do everything with them on what we call an age-appropriate basis, like people do with kids. We don't take a tiny puppy to the theater. She's not ready for that. We work them up slowly, starting with very small stores, very small businesses. We don't take them to Walmart and Target and Publix when they're tiny puppies. It's just too overwhelming, and we certainly don't want to frighten them early on.
Sure. And so you kind of break the training up into, like, groups, like, you know, some age to one age, you know. Is it in segments, kind of?
In our puppy raising manual, mm-hmm. which is a very helpful tool for us, it's broken up by ages. These are the commands you teach at this age. These are the exposures that would be appropriate at this age. Now continue with those commands, and now that your dog is older, start these commands and think about these exposures. We work them up with levels of chaos of traffic situations. You'd never take a young puppy into heavy traffic, but by the time they're older and almost ready to leave us, they need to be solid walking along heavy traffic because that's what they'll do for a living.
So it's kind of like, I mean, you truly have to think that dog has to go everywhere that a blind person might go.
Yes, absolutely.
And have to at least have one or two experiences going to those kinds of places.
Absolutely. For example, I will tell people that, oh, I went to the movie with my dog yesterday, and I'll often get the response, why would you go to the movie with the dog? Like a blind person is going to do that? Absolutely blind people do that. There are whole blind bowling leagues, and I bet you they bowl better than I do. So it's the kind of thing you would want to expose a puppy to because you just don't know what the lifestyle of that final person might be.
How about the beach? You bring the puppy to the beach?
Beach is touchy. Most beaches are not dog
beaches. That's
where you
go. Good question, Flea.
Yeah, good question, Flea. Question I wish you hadn't asked, Flea, because it's touchy. Dogs are not allowed on most beaches. for good reason, because a lot of people don't clean up after their dogs. No one wants that on their beach. With the coat, technically that dog could be walking on the beach. It is walking in front of a lot of people who are jealous that their dog can't be on the beach. And it is absolutely getting everyone's scrutiny. And it is wearing a blue coat that advertises our school. So you don't let the dog play in the waves at the beach in its coat, because they don't play in their coat. It would kind of be abusive of the privilege. What you really want to do if you're taking a dog on the beach is give it the exposure to walking on wet and dry sand, which you can do with a level of decorum. But turning it loose to play in its puppy coat, not okay.
Mm-hmm. How about taking a, so let's say you've committed to raising a puppy for a year, maybe a little bit longer. You want to go on vacation. You bring the puppy with you?
Depends where you're going. Internationally, no, but within the country, absolutely. I've been on 65 airplane flights with dogs just flawlessly.
Tell us about riding on a plane with the dog. Where's the dog go? Under your seat?
Under your seat, absolutely.
Or you buy an extra seat?
Under your seat, because that's where they would be if they were with their final handler. They need to be used to being next to their person. It's amazing how small you can crunch up a 65-pound dog to get it under a coach seat, but believe me, you can. And for a reason I don't fully understand, they are very calm on planes. I've had some dogs that were somewhat high-strung, and I've gone into plane flights thinking, well, this one might be a little bit tougher. No, fine. They sleep. They curl up and they sleep. Your trick is to keep the dog in your foot space with your feet. And we all know how big an area that is, so that it isn't impinging on the next guy's foot space.
Yeah, the airplane space is getting smaller all the time.
The other tricky part is getting through security. Lots of different ways you might get through security. And I tried them all before I settled on a way that was easiest for the dog. Typically, the TSA agents will defer to you because they really don't know what the best way would be. For example, wanding is not so great. As soon as you start running that wand along the dog, it thinks it's a chew toy and it's going to get giddy, and we don't want them giddy in the security line. But that's where you have the advice of more veteran raisers to help you out. Somebody has gone wherever you are planning on going. So, Dan, tell me how it is you do airplanes. I know you've flown with dogs before.
So typically a person would just, a puppy raiser, ask you that question, but there's also meetings, right?
Twice a month we have local meetings, not down on the campus, but in the local areas where the raisers are, so that we can keep up on the handler skills and the dog's progress. We have puppy raising groups in many of the southeastern states. I can't tell you exactly how many states right now, but we are as far as Texas and up to Tennessee, because we are the only guide dog school in the southeast. So we have between 200 and 250 puppies out at any time.
Wow.
And they're spread over that area. So they are in local groups with local area coordinators. So your puppy manual and your area coordinator are your go-to people to get the support you need to do the job, rather than needing to communicate with the campus or go down to the campus. We would want everyone to visit the campus at least once, even if they were raising out of state, but it isn't a place that you have to go to all the time for meetings.
So a typical meeting, how many people are in the group, and tell me a little bit more about the meetings.
We try to keep the groups under about a dozen dogs, because there's a tremendous amount of management involved, and the meetings vary. It would be hard to describe a typical meeting except to say that there are announcements and obedience at every meeting, and then the rest of the meeting is the experience of wherever you might happen to be. We have toured the Stras. Part of that is doing an applause test, which is a lot of fun. We start with little wimpy hand patting, and we work up to cheering and clapping, more voraciously. We've gone to miniature golfing. Once again, that is a sport that our dog handlers do tend to participate in. We take them to all different kinds of stores. Our next meeting will be a scavenger hunt in a store. So the dog has to do all kinds of obedience things along the way and has to meet these certain benchmarks as it finds things in the store. Just different ways of keeping it interesting and exposing the dogs to a lot of different places. Often places that perhaps you wouldn't take your dog. We take them kayaking. Maybe you're not a kayaker and your dog never would have gotten that experience, but we kind of made you do it by making a puppy meeting that involved kayaking.
Wow. Kayaking. Yeah. Interesting.
It's fun.
Who would have thought? Who thinks of all these things anyway?
We area coordinators. That's our job. Part of our job.
Do you have like a area coordinator group? Do you get all the other coordinators?
We do. We have a conference once a year, and then a lot of us know each other a little bit socially, and we'll just get our heads together to see how somebody handles a particular situation or a particular meeting venue that they have found to be very interesting. everybody comes up with something unique. I have a personal friend who's a church organist. So every couple of years we go there and he puts the organ through its paces so the dogs can hear all those different pitches and volumes. So somebody else just might never have thought of that. Well, you might know somebody, one of your puppy raisers may know the church organist and might be able to arrange that gig for you.
So is there like a, yeah, if you're a puppy raiser, I mean, obviously you will tell them about these things, but there's a giant list of things that, to make sure that you bring your puppy to try?
There is a giant list of things. You certainly don't have to hit them all, but it's a suggested list of things so that if you're running dry a little bit, I haven't taken the dog somewhere new in a while, what might I try? You can look at the list. One of my puppy raisers recently realized that she still hadn't gotten her dog in front of cows. So she went out looking for cows, which is not terribly easy to do in metropolitan Tampa. But there is a list, but we don't hold the puppies absolutely to checking off all of those items. And as I've said before, we don't want to rush them into things they're not ready for. So it's suggested.
So cows are on the list.
Cows are on the list. Sheep? You never know how they might react. Sheep aren't on the list. I'm sorry. Lesser citizens than cows, apparently.
All right. So you've got this dog. You're going to these meetings, to two meetings a month, and you're getting training on how to, you know, raise a dog. I mean, I bet some people probably... You find most puppy raisers have raised a dog and know a little bit about discipline, or do you think there are some that really have never done anything at all like that?
Most people are what we would call dog people. So they've had pet dogs in the past. That is both a pro and a con, really, because you know a bit about dogs, absolutely. But because your dogs have been pets, you're probably caught in that scheme of being a little bit permissive.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiling a little bit too much.
As I think it's
a lot
cute when the dog licks my hand, but
absolutely.
Not allowed.
So it wouldn't hurt you to have some dog experience, but if you'd never raised a dog before, we could give you the skills if it's something you really wanted to do.
And so you've got the dog for a year and a half. What are your responsibilities as a raiser financially? Do you pay for the vet bills, the food? How's that work?
It's split up a bit. The school pays for our veterinary costs. We have veterinary partners in all of these different cities and states where our dogs are located who give us a bit of a deal, sometimes a bit of a deal, sometimes a huge deal on the veterinary costs for the puppies while they're in training. The school gives us our heartworm preventative. We buy our own food and toys. We buy our own flea preventative. So it's
flea preventative?
Flea.
Wait a minute.
Preventative. That's F-L-E-A.
Oh, okay. All right.
Preventative.
Now you don't want to keep me away.
No.
So what would you say, you know, let's you know, it's a fun thing to do, but it's not easy.
Correct.
What is the hardest part in raising a puppy, do you think?
The time commitment, if I want to be general. The time commitment. You mm-hmm. really give up your life to a certain extent to make sure that you're meeting the needs of the dog and you're paying attention to the dog. I could go to the mall with a friend for 4 hours if I want to, but one eye and one ear are on the friend and the other eye and the other ear are on the puppy because I have to know what she's doing. I have to know she's not reaching for something inappropriate. So if I have to stop in the middle of our conversation to address what the puppy is doing, I will do that and the friend needs to understand it. So that would be the toughest thing speaking generally. The toughest thing speaking specifically, I would have to say, is the fact that our dogs, working guide dogs, need to be willing to relieve themselves on any surface, at any time, on command. Blind people tend to be creatures of habit, and they need to make sure that dog is emptied before it goes into a building. So you are a guide dog user, you take a city bus to the mall, you get off that city bus at the mall in the middle of a whole bunch of asphalt. If you have no vision at all, and mind you, a lot of guide dog users still have some vision, but if you have no vision at all, you wouldn't know where the grass was. So that dog needs to be willing to go anywhere. If you're on an airport tarmac between planes, boy, have I found this one useful. You step aside, you relieve that dog, and you get back on the next flight. Teaching them to go on varying surfaces is a challenge. If you start with them very, very young, much less of a challenge. If you fall off the wagon, it's a tough one.
Yeah, that's the main reason why you come here to WMNF, because we have a gravel driveway
here. There
you go,
absolutely. We do love our gravel.
Busy practice.
Love our gravel.
So you become attached to the puppies, don't you?
Oh, yes.
So and I know this is the biggest question. So, I mean, how do you let them go? I mean, you've had it for a year and a half. I mean, can you change your mind and keep the puppy?
You can't change your mind. We do know what we sign up for, and we do sign contracts. Really, the day that you give your puppy away, in my experience, is not as difficult as the 4 to 6 weeks coming up on that day when you're experiencing your lasts This is probably the last movie we're going to go to together. I bet this is the last restaurant we're going to go to together. You can get a little maudlin. But when it comes down to the day, you know you're doing the right thing. Typically, in the waning months of when you have the puppy, you realize you've taught them the skills you were supposed to. They're really ready for the next step. And we didn't raise these dogs to get pets. We raise these dogs for somebody who needs them. We may love them, and we do love them, and we are with them 24 hours a day, which you certainly aren't with your dog, but we don't need them. And the purpose of getting into this business is to give them to somebody who needs them. They make such a difference in lifestyles.
Do you ever get to see the puppy again?
Often.
Really?
Yeah, there isn't a guarantee, but if your dog were to make it to become a guide dog, and many, many of them do not, chances are you would get the opportunity to go to what we call Puppy Raiser Day, which is the day that you would meet the new handler and see your dog after not seeing it for 6 or 8 or 10 months while it was in its professional training. Sometimes dogs are placed with handlers in their homes instead of on our campus, which means you wouldn't get that opportunity. Some of our dogs that don't make it as guides go into different careers, may or may not know about your dog's, not know about, you will know about, but you may not be able to have any follow-up on your dog's performance and your dog's well-being after that. Some of our dogs go to law enforcement. Sometimes those are a little bit sensitive jobs, and so you might not be hearing from the law enforcement agency about how the dog is doing. But frequently you have a little follow-up. It's up to the final owner of the dog whether they would like to continue to maintain the puppy raiser in their lives.
Great. That's really nice. And so you mentioned that not all the puppies end up being guide dogs. Like I think Duncan had, I guess you have a thing called the Veteran Service Dogs thing at the Southeastern Guide Dog Town.
Yes, you had Judy and Mike on the air quite a few months ago. We do, for some of our dogs who don't have the particular skill set to be guides, and once again, it's very demanding work and very stressful work, so they don't all have the skill set. Not every teenager is going to medical school. Not every dog is going to guide. But for some of the ones who don't, we do route them into our Paws for Patriots Avenue, which has several different kinds of placements, one of which is the veteran service dog for our veterans returning from duty who have been injured and who have experienced typically PTSD symptoms and have that lingering issue to deal with. And our dogs are trained specially for those needs as opposed to being trained for visual impairment. And this would be after it is determined that the dog doesn't have the skill set that we need for the work with the visually impaired.
Is there a particular skill that is typical the dog doesn't have to become a guide dog? Is there a particular thing that they often fail on? Or not, or is it?
There are quite a few things, and it is individual. It might be a fear issue. It might be a health issue, which nobody could do anything about. Poor hips or an allergy concern.
Right.
Living in Florida, allergies are such a problem. But varying reasons. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's just a lack of the steadiness required to be kind of bomb-proof in any situation. If you're walking down Kennedy and a truck backfires, dog needs to be rock solid. It can flinch. You're going to flinch, but it can't break down. So that steadiness is the number one thing. If they don't have the steadiness, you're not going to teach them that.
Right. I mean, pretty have to be perfect on all counts.
Pretty close. The standards are very, very high.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got a person's life in your hands, in your paws, so to speak.
They have to keep both of you safe.
So it seems like there's a bigger need for puppy raisers right now. Is that true?
Comes and goes. Ebbs and flows. We happen to have a lot of dogs right now that are looking for puppy raising homes. We have particular needs in the local area, Sarasota, Tampa, Pinellas. We also have needs in North Carolina, Atlanta, Houston. There is a link to a map of all the puppy raising groups if you go to our website. But we always need good people who go through the process and go through the necessary discernment to figure out whether this is a good fit. You're a perfect example of this. You started down the road to be a puppy raiser, and along the way, coming to meeting after meeting after meeting, showing your diligence, you and your family realized that full-time raising wasn't a perfect fit for you. So we found the avenue for you to help us on more of an auxiliary basis, doing some of the puppy sitting. You have to know all of the rules, of course, to do puppy sitting, because they're going to be in your home 24 hours a day. But I applaud you and others like you who do put in the necessary time to realize that this isn't something that one can do on a whim.
Right. So let's say maybe you can't, you're thinking, oh, I really want to help out. I don't have 24/7. What else? Are there other things people can do to help out in the...
Puppy raisers are the hardcore volunteers who have to be a little bit crazy to do the 24/7 thing.
I don't think it's crazy. It's just, you know, it depends on your schedule, your job, and things like that.
Absolutely. You've got to be able to give your all. Give your all to this time commitment. There are lots of ways that you can help. Certainly, we're always in need of funds. We get no government support. We're all supported by
We know about that here at WMNF.
Like you. Yes, you sure do. Right now, we have an interesting fundraising challenge. We are building a new canine assessment center, which is the first building that our dogs go into when they leave the puppy raiser homes and go back down on campus. And we have a very generous benefactor whose name is Keith Hurst, who has volunteered to match up to $500,000 of people's charitable donations toward that million-dollar building. So he's going to double those first $500,000 worth of donations. So financial contribution is a huge way that anyone could help. That certainly could be reached by going to guidedogs.org as well. Puppy hugging. Puppy hugging is a service. It sounds like it's just fun, but it's how we socialize our dogs to people of all ages and sizes and shapes and everything else. So that's something you could do. While you're down there puppy hugging, you can walk the adult dogs that are in training. You are certainly helping. We don't have enough hands to give every single dog in the kennel a couple of nice walks a day, so our volunteers do that as well.
Hey, Jen, let me interrupt here. Sure. And where is that that location? It's pretty close. It's over the Skyway.
The campus is in Palmetto. It's just off the south end of the Sunshine Skyway, yes.
Takes just a couple minutes to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy.
It's about 40 minutes probably from here.
But it's right out, just on the other side. So back to some of the other things people can do. I think I remember you mentioning before today someone would have the mother dog or something.
Yes, that's an interesting job. It's called being a breeder host family. We own all of our own breeders, almost all of our own breeders. Occasionally, we take dogs in from the outside to enrich our genetic pool. But we own the vast majority of our breeders. And those dogs need to live somewhere. They don't live on the kennel all of their lives. So they live in families as... let's say glorified house pets. They are your house dog. They no longer wear a coat. They no longer go into buildings. They don't have public access anymore. But they are with your family until their services are needed. And when their services are needed, they're called down onto campus. And moms stay down with their puppies, as I said, for the first 6 weeks of the puppies' lives so that they can get a nice, natural, early start to their lives. And then the moms come back to their breeder host families and stay with them until the next time they might be needed. Dads don't have to be away as long.
Always easy on the dads, isn't it?
It is.
So someone wants to get involved. What do they do?
Go to the website. It's loaded with information. It's been revised in the last year, and just almost everything is there about our different serving capacities, like the veteran service dogs versus the guide dogs, and about the volunteer opportunities, about our different events. We have walkathons in March, February and March, typically. That would be someplace else that someone could volunteer to be an assistant at the walkathon locations. We're going to have a walkathon in Tampa this year. We're going to expand to the villages. And then we have Sarasota and Bradenton and St. Pete, if I'm remembering correctly.
Great. So you bring the dogs out in public. I know you've got some funny. What is the weirdest thing that's ever happened with a puppy out there in public?
Weirdest is tough, but I'll give you one that was a lot of fun. I've told you that we teach the dogs to go to the bathroom on any kind of a surface. But when you're flying with a dog, everything is heightened in terms of how I'm going to get through this day and not have an accident, because you know how long flying days can be, and if you have an extra layover, it can be even worse. So we were leaving San Francisco Airport at one point to come home. And I said to the limousine driver, it was a corporate trip, so we had a real live limousine, is there someplace quite near the airport where you could pull off and get us some grass? Because I really wanted to know she emptied, so I asked for the grass because that's where she would empty for sure, as opposed to going for the hard surface. Would you know a place with grass you could pull off before?
In San Francisco, he probably thought you meant pot.
He said, yes. He thought for a minute. He said, yes, sure. So he pulled over shortly before the airport to a median strip on an 8-lane highway. And out we got to our little patch of grass. And he stood there with the door open in his livery, waiting for us to potty on the side of the freeway. That was
I would have been scared. I would have gone to the bathroom.
She didn't. So that was kind of a tense day. You have the hour before the flight, you have the flying, you have the layover, you have the next flight. But she made it.
She made it. Held it for a long time.
She did.
I don't know. I remember you telling me some story about meeting the public and sometimes interesting interactions with the public. And It was something to do with ice cream on the fingers or something. Someone went...
Oh, that was another puppy raiser. Someone actually approached one of our puppy raisers a few months ago in public and asked if the dog could lick her grandchild's fingers because they were sticky with ice cream.
That's not one of the services you provide.
Not one of the services we provide.
Well, Jan, thank you very much for coming by and tell us all about puppy raising.
Very happy to be here.
Did I forget anything that people need to know? Any last thing for people to get involved
or warning, if you will? I'll give you an interesting last quip.
Okay.
Most of us were raised to call these animals seeing eye dogs. Mm-hmm. You have not heard me say that for the last half an hour.
No.
Seeing Eye is a registered name for another guide dog school, like Kleenex and Xerox are registered names. Our dogs are called guide dogs.
Really? Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. Why don't you give out the website one more time for people if they're interested in getting involved in also many ways.
Absolutely. www.guidedogs.org.
Great. Well, every week Duncan plays at least one animal song, and this one is from the Rolling Stones. It's a stripped-down version of The Spider and the Fly.
Sitting, thinking, sinking, drinking, wondering what I'll do when I'm through tonight. Smoking, moping, maybe just hoping some little girl will pass on by. Superficially thinking about the rinsed out blonde on my left. And then I said hi like a spider to a fly, remembering what my little girl said. Would've run away, but I was on my own. She told me later she was a machine operator. She said the way I held the microphone. And then I said, my, like a spider to a fly, I jumped right ahead in my will. Thank you.
Rolling Stones from Stripped, A Spider and a Fly. Don't forget that we are having a tribute to the Rolling Stones. Mick Jagger turns 70 on July 26th. And so we are going to celebrate that by having two nights of Rolling Stones covers by bands in the area. We're going to do it on Friday night, the 26th, at the State Theater. Show begins at 7 o'clock sharp, doors at 6 o'clock, and we're going to have about 3 hours of bands doing covers of Rolling Stones songs, and then something no one's ever done before is Talk to Mark is going to play the entire Exile on Main Street album all the way through, all four sides, in order. So it's something that's never been done before. You want to check that out. Of course, then on Saturday, we're going to do it again. This time at Skipper's Smokehouse, and everything's the same. The doors at 6. Show starts at 7 o'clock sharp. We'll still do the Exile on Main Street. Of course, it'll be the second time it's done. And tickets are only $12 in advance. You can get tickets by calling 813-238-8001 and go to WMNF.org. Tickets are $15 at the door. Well, I hope everyone's going to have a great 4th of July. And if you've got a new dog or a dog that maybe has problems with fireworks, we got some tips and stuff. And Janice here, and she's obviously worked with dogs over the 4th of July. And the best thing to do with a dog. Well, number one, I've got a few of these things. We've got fireworks. Go for a long walk the day of the fireworks and tire your dog out. Get the dog really tired before the fireworks start. I don't think I'd recommend taking dogs to fireworks, I know everyone has their own fireworks now, and no matter where you live, there's a fireworks display going on. Something I didn't know, there are canine-safe earplugs for dogs. They can wear the earplugs. Also, and Jan, maybe you can talk about this, about distract the dog. When the fireworks are going off, you don't want to coddle the dog, do you?
Absolutely. That's number one, especially
take this
us.
And run with this one.
Yeah, really for anybody, especially for our program dogs that have to be so solid in any situation. But you never want to coddle a dog in any setting. So if it seems to be a little afraid of the fireworks, what you want to do is be cheery. Blow it off. If you don't look bothered, then the dog won't be bothered. It takes its vibes from you. You might turn up the TV or the radio so that the booms aren't as loud from in the house, but if it shows any trepidation, the very last thing you want to do is scoop it up and say, oh, baby, it's all right, because that's condoning the fear.
Yeah, and you probably don't want to leave the dog alone. If you can't be around, maybe you can get a friend or something, because according to Cesar Milan, I checked his website on these things, that Independence Day, 4th of July, more pets are lost than any other time.
Doesn't really surprise me. If they take off spooked and run, you could end up in Kentucky.
Yeah, so she says to involve your dog's nose. Some scents such as lavender or pine can encourage your dog to relax. Have you ever tried any of those things?
Lavender is calming. We use it in our kennels down on the campus.
Really? So how would you get this lavender scent? Like in a...
Probably a bath kind of store, natural lavender.
Okay. But what does it come? It comes like in a spray or something, or soap?
There are oils.
What do I know about scents?
Yeah,
nothing.
I don't know a whole lot either. There are oils that you can put in little atomizer sorts of things. I think there are some plug-ins that you can use. Some of the plug-in air fresheners. You just want to make
there
sure
you go.
It was a natural.
That's
scent.
Interesting. I wonder how that works.
I've never used it, but I'm told it's helpful.
And of course, your dog should be ID'd, be chipped, and have its collar on and all that kind of stuff. But from someone who's seen a lot of stray dogs, I know that's not always true. And then, of course, also be proactive. You can start working, it's too late for this year, but start working on next year by getting your dog used to fireworks sounds. And if you go online, you can find check fireworks, and there's things you can do by playing the sounds of fireworks quietly and then gradually build up to louder. But check that out and get some more information on that. So make sure you don't lose your dog this weekend. And we also do a little something, or Duncan always does something, a little rip and read from his news sources. And here you go. You believe it or not, dogs are getting plastic surgery. I can't believe this. Out in L.A., KABC says that some people are paying big bucks for plastic surgery. Everything from tattoos to implants for neutered animals. Purely cosmetic procedures can be expensive, and people don't think about the, this is according to Dr. Chris Byrne, don't think about the pain and recovery, and also putting a dog under, you could lose a dog that way. So anyway, they're doing that out in L.A. Let's hope it doesn't catch on too much. And then a special treat going on today, a treat for everybody. The Tropical Smoothie Cafe in Tampa is hosting a Declare Your Independence from Meat tasting party on July 3rd. That's today. Tasty smoothie at 2928 East Fowler Avenue. is serving up samples of vegetarian, vegan meats. They're meat-free chicken strips that supposedly taste like chicken. Everything tastes like chicken, so I'm sure they do. So if you want to try out some, you want to give the vegan or vegetarian thing a try, go see how good that food can taste at Tropical Smoothie Cafe. And once again, it's at 2928 East Fowler Avenue, and they're doing that all day today. And check that out. Well, we're going to leave you with one more animal song, once again by the Rolling Stones, because we are excited about the Mick Jagger birthday thing happening on July 26th and 27th. It is a WMNF benefit, so check that out. We're going to hear something from the Rolling Stones called, well, I'm not going to tell you what it is. We're gonna have a prize, a CD. If you email in dj@wmnf.org and tell me the name of this song, we'll send you a CD, the first person in, and I'll email you back and get your address to the first person. This is the Rolling Stones with an older song from them, which you have to guess. dj@wmf.org. Jan, once again, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
You are listening to 88.5 WMNF Tampa.
I am the little red rooster. Too lazy to crow for day. I am the little red rooster. Too lazy to crow for day. Keep everything in the farm gone. Upset in every way. The dogs begin to bark. Hounds begin to howl. Dogs begin to bark. Begin to howl. Watch how strange can be. Little red rooster's on the prowl. If you see my little red rooster.